Thank you. One of the more fun parts of our meeting is that we have the youth involved, and they help us in doing our flag salute. So tonight we are very pleased to be joined by Kendall Moore. Kendall is 9 years old and a third grade student at Fairgrove Elementary School. She likes math, science, sharing in class, and her nice friends at school. I know she's pretty popular. Kendall enjoys going to the beach for family days, and her hobbies are art and playing the viola. She would like to be a scientist when she finishes her education. Kendall is accompanied this evening by, I think, by her mom, grandma, brother, and sister, and I believe principal, Laura Storm. So, Kendall, if you would like to come and lead us in the pledge, that would be wonderful.
To the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Kendall. And we have something for you.
Thank you so much for coming.
Appreciate it.
You did a great job. Thank you. I love that purple you're wearing. It's really pretty.
Please be seated. Roll call, Donna.
Here.
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 Here. Thank you, Donna. Typically, we would do closed session announcements, but we have none this evening. Let's move on to our agenda review. This is where the council reviews the order of the agenda as presented by staff and decides if we want to change the order of the agenda. Do any members of the council want to change the order of the agenda as presented by staff?
I'll make a motion that we accept the agenda as presented.
I'll second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. So we are going to proceed with our agenda this evening as presented, and I believe there are extra copies back on the table. Let's see. So ceremonial calendars, we have none this evening. Let's move to public communications, and this is an opportunity for any member of the community to address the council on a period not to exceed 3 minutes on any item within the jurisdiction of this council. Please bear in mind that because the item is not on the agenda, we cannot take any action on that. So is there anyone that would like to address the council tonight during public communication?
Good evening, Council. Mayor, my name is Brad Snook from Surf Rider Foundation. Been giving public comment to the council here in Grover Beach regarding the sanitation district and a change of representation from Grover Beach. Surf Rider would not be involved with the issues at the sanitation district without the verified concerns of whistleblowers at Grover Beach's wastewater treatment plant. Surf Rider spent 6 months requesting an independent investigation of the plant. The city's council did not stand up for water quality. This council did not authorize an investigation, mostly choosing to focus on the costs the Wallace Group's conflicts of interest have on ratepayers. These conflicts remain in place. There was also a monetary cost to pay for the whistleblowers, and ratepayers have a right to know. Why does the Wallace Group make money even when things go poorly at the plant? Surf Rider's not going away on this because the trust is gone. If you had someone at the sanitation district who was asking hard questions from the start, it might be different. Instead, we heard misrepresentations and defensiveness. Read the NOVs, we asked. Read the notices of violation. The plant was violating since 2006. People in our county were swimming, potentially swimming in sewage, but your representative did not take action on that account. I brought you copies of the NOVs, and you might remember that, to show the plant had been breaking the law for many years. Is your representative representing the facts, or is your representative a Wallace Group superfan? these are the types of issues we will be discussing, and hopefully the council will take it on their agenda to discuss their representation of the sanitation district soon. Thank you.
Thank you, Brad. Is there anyone else that would like to address the council doing public communication this evening? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to close it and bring it back to the council. And let's move into our public hearings this evening. And this is item number one on the agenda, and this is the Grover Beach Lodge and Conference Center. Who's going to start this off, City Manager?
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, just by way of some introductory remarks, as you know, this is a very significant project for the city. It's been long awaited by the council. It is a project that has a great deal of magnitude and complexity, as you can see in the materials that you have presented before you. Actually, it's my recommendation that you take this in two steps, that tonight the EIR be introduced and reviewed, and then project description be outlined for you. Eventually you would want to open the public hearing and entertain any testimony from those present. My suggestion is that you would ultimately continue the public hearing to another date to take final action on the project. I'm not saying that there isn't things you can do tonight, obviously.
Questions of the city manager?
With that, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Buckingham, who will review the project for you.
Good evening, Mayor, members of the council. The applicant, Pacifica Companies, is proposing the development of a 150-room hotel, restaurant, and conference facility. The project is on a 13-acre site located at the west end of Grand Avenue. The city's general plan designation is visitor-serving, and the zoning is coastal plan commercial. Just a little orientation to the site. The project is bound by the dunes and ocean to the west, the existing golf course to the north, the existing LaSage Mobile Home Park to the northeast, and to the east, the LaSage RV Park. This vacant lot right here is a approved mixed-use, three-story mixed-use project that was approved a few years back. Obviously, Grand Avenue here at the very bottom of the screen. Here is Highway 1, and the train station is just off the edge of the screen there. The project is unique. It's obviously in the city of Grover Beach, but it is also located within Pismo State Beach, or the state park. And this has created an unusual background and development review process that I wanted to take some time to explain tonight. The process starts about 30 years ago in 1982 when the state amended its general development plan for Pismo State Beach to designate the site for the development of a 150-room lodge and conference center. So 30 years ago, state parks initiated the idea of developing the site. In 1994, the state legislature adopted legislation that amended the Public Resource Code, and it authorized a 50-year lease term with a concessionaire for the development of a hotel at this specific site. This was in recognition because the maximum concession lease is usually 20 years, and it was not long enough to attract the capital investment and financing necessary to construct a hotel and conference center. In 2006, the city and state parks entered into a joint powers agreement, or JPA. This established formal roles and responsibilities between the city and the state, and together they formed the joint authority for this project. The joint powers agreement established a procedure for the selection of the developer, the development review public process to select a hotel developer. Pacifica Companies out of San Diego was selected by the JA as the qualified firm. In June of 2009, the JA entered into a concession contract with Pacifica Companies to develop the lodge and conference center. The concession contract is valid for 50 years from the first date of operation, and at the end of 50 years, the project will revert back to the state. In December 2010, after a design review process, the JA approved the schematic or conceptual design for the project. So we finally got to the public hearing process after several years, and in July of 2011, the Planning Commission held a public hearing and recommended the City Council approve the project. But they passed along one specific comment to the Council, and that was that the proposed conference center be increased in size to provide a more substantial event space. So in response to that comment, the applicant elected to increase the size of the conference center, and that caused several revisions to the proposed project. So after making those revisions last month, the Planning Commission held another public hearing to consider the revised project and did recommend that the City Council certify the final EIR and approve the project. There are several entitlements or applications that go with the project that I wanted to go through. The project does require the certification of the final environmental impact report that's been prepared for the project. And there are four applications that go with that. The first is the Local Coastal Program, or LCP, amendment. It proposes four changes to allow the development of the project. It proposes changes related to building height, access, the equestrian parking area, and updated information on water and sewer capacity. A zoning code amendment is required to change the approximately 1 acre area south of West Grand, on the south side of West Grand Avenue, from coastal open space to public facility zone. This allows the proposed equestrian area to be operated on the south side of Grand. The Coastal Development Permit, or CDP, is required for all projects within the coastal zone to ensure the project is consistent with that local coastal program, or LCP. And finally, the Site and Architectural Plan application is required to ensure the project is consistent with its city codes and policies. So the council can take action on all these applications. The local coastal program and the zoning code amendments are, it was also to create a recreational oriented destination for visitors and residents of the city, enhance and increase visitor and resident use of the state park. And very important, it was the objective to enhance state park facilities that increase visitor enjoyment by improving not only the public plaza, picnic areas, walkways, and landscaping. And I'll show those things in a minute here when we get to the site plan. And also, this project is to serve as a catalyst for future development in the city of Grover Beach. So let me talk about the project itself and the project description. As I mentioned, it's a 150-room hotel, conference center, and restaurant, totaling about 124,000 square feet within four buildings. And the main building, or building one, is located here. This is building two, and building three are the satellite buildings. And it's a little bit difficult to see because of the coloring, but the conference center is the fourth building here. So starting with building one, here are the elevations of it. The building's about 40 feet in height. It consists of about 63,000 square feet, again, being the main building. And the primary building materials do consist of siding and stucco with accent materials. Additional elevations. The floor plan's a little bit difficult to read here at this scale, but this is the east side of the project here. And the building includes the main entry, lobby, check-in, gift shops, a couple of small conference rooms here, here, and down here, as well as then guest rooms, primarily on the second and third floors. Oh, let me point out, the restaurant is here on the west side, and the pool is located here. So the restaurant is has views and is oriented towards the ocean. Well, I don't have my slide of building two and three, but the satellite buildings are exclusively guest rooms. The two buildings are about 33 feet in height and are about 25,000 square feet each. The next building is the conference center. The building is about 11,000 square feet, approximately 28. It does have a separate kitchen prep area in the rear, as well as restrooms, breakout rooms, and pre-function or the hallways that surround it that are kind of multi-purpose use as well. In talking about the site plan and the changes to it, the first I'll talk about is parking. The applicant is proposing 261 parking spaces, which exceeds the zoning code requirement of 158 parking spaces. That primary lodge parking is located in this vicinity. The parking lot also includes diagonal parking spaces that can be used as pull-through spaces for oversized vehicles such as trucks with trailers and large RVs. So those pull-through spaces are specifically located in this row here. The existing state park today, if you drive out there, has 160 paved parking spaces, and the proposed project does retain all 160 spaces as required by our local coastal program. But it does redistribute the parking spaces differently than they exist today. The 52 parking spaces that are adjacent to the golf course remain, although they're relocated. They're currently to the west of the clubhouse here, as you see, and the existing event tents. But the 52 spaces for the golf course remain. There are 52 spaces here adjacent to Finn's, but the parking that's north of Finn's, which is, I'm sorry, that building there, the 52 spaces here, 56, are relocated to the southeast corner. So you now have 160 parking spaces, southeast corner, adjacent to Finn's, as well as adjacent to the golf course. The I'll mention also that the public parking here does also have, again, the same design with pull-through parking spaces that would allow oversized vehicle parking. I'll also add that the public parking lots would all include signage directing the public to the lots and differentiating public parks from lodge parking as well. In talking about the public amenities now, the integration of the lodge facilities into the existing state park amenities led to a redesign and expansion of some of the existing facilities out of there, or I should say really all of the facilities that exist out there. So as a result, existing public areas would be upgraded. Existing public walkways would be reconfigured, new walkways added within the site, and a common design theme using compatible construction materials to provide a uniform appearance throughout the state park. So you really have an integration of the two facilities that should be seamless in how they function. The existing public plaza, which is to the is located currently in this location. With the relocation of the parking to the north of Finn's today, this public plaza is enlarged quite significantly. It would increase the public use areas, it would add picnic areas, and it would create some drought-tolerant turf areas for passive uses, which are lacking out there today. Few things regarding walkways. You know, here's the existing public boardwalk that we're all familiar with, and in essence, it would extend that along the west boundary of the project and then kind of tie into the existing public plaza area. Again, you can see all the other pathways around the buildings and access to all of the uses within the site plan. The golf course, as I mentioned, remains virtually unchanged. The putting green is gets relocated to adjacent to the just south of the clubhouse here. Again, I mentioned the parking lot gets relocated to the east, and the events tent gets shifted a few feet to the north here. Existing Meadow Creek along the eastern boundary of the project, right now it's pretty devoid of vegetation outside of the creek, but there will be a 50-foot riparian buffer area that would be added all along that creek, as well as a trail that would extend along the edge of the creek there adjacent to the parking lot. The equestrian area, parking area that's currently on site is relocated south of Grand. It would allow for circulation coming in here off of Grand, 10 to 15 parking spaces, depending on the size of vehicles. this shows the delineation of the parking spaces, but after further discussion, there would be no formal delineation of parking spaces. And then lastly, the existing RV sewer dump station would be removed from the site, and it would be relocated to the North Beach campground about a half mile to the north, where there is an existing dump station, and that would just simply be expanded to accommodate the loss facility on site here. So with that, I'm going to pass it over to, this is Bill Henry with SWCA Environmental Consultants, who prepared the EIR, and I'm going to have him go ahead and discuss the environmental impact report for the project.
Okay, Bill, you have the floor.
Thank you, Bruce. Mayor Scholes, members of the City Council, Bill Henry, SWCA Environmental Consultants. Like Bruce said, our company prepared the Environmental Impact Report, and this evening I'm going to talk to you about that report and the CEQA process. I'm going to start out and just talk a little bit about EIRs and why they're required and typically what they consist of. They're usually required on larger projects when the lead agency feels that the project has the potential to have a significant environmental effect. An environmental impact report is prepared to identify all of the impacts of a project. They're intended to be disclosure documents, a tool for the public, agencies, and decision makers to use to provide informed comments and make informed decisions on a project. The first substantive step in the process of preparing this EIR was the scoping meeting that was held in June 2010. And that scoping meeting enabled members of the public and agencies to provide input as to what they thought should be included in the draft EIR. Subsequent to that public scoping meeting, the draft EIR was prepared, and it was sent out for public review for a 45-day period, starting in December of 2010 and ending in January of 2011. After that public comment period, comments were responded to, and revisions were made to the draft EIR, and that was the final EIR that went before the Planning Commission in July of 2011. As Bruce mentioned a moment ago, as a result of comments, Pacifica agreed to make revisions to the proposed project, primarily increase in size of the conference center and breaking that facility apart from the hotel. Since we had a final EIR at that point, the city and SWCA needed to take a look at whether those project revisions were going to create any new environmental impacts or the need for any new mitigation measures. And in going through that process, it was determined that there were four issue areas that had the greatest potential for there to be new impacts. Those issue areas were aesthetics, hydrology, noise, and traffic. And as part of that process, our technical consultants on our project, on our EIR team, the traffic engineer, for instance, took a closer look at the revised project, prepared technical memorandums, and as a result of that process, determined that for these four issue areas, there were no new environmental impacts that would result, and no new mitigation measures that would be required due to the revisions that were made to the project at that point in time. We revised the final EIR to incorporate those to incorporate the project revisions and to incorporate the new technical information. And that's the EIR that you have before you this evening. It also contains responses to the comments that were received on the draft EIR. Drilling down a little bit deeper into the EIR itself, I'm going to go through the environmental issues that were looked at. I'm going to start with the issues that were determined to be insignificant, and I'll list them off here. Agricultural resources, hazards, land use, paleontological resources, public services, utilities, and recreation. Those were issue areas where early on we could tell that there would be there wasn't a need to go deep into the evaluation. For instance, with hazards, a phase one environmental site assessment was prepared, and it was determined that there was no hazardous or hazardous material issues related with the project site. The second area that was looked at in the environmental impact report were issues that were potentially significant, but could be reduced to a level of insignificance, or as they say in the CEQA world, mitigated. The issues that were significant but reduced to a level of insignificance were aesthetics, air quality, biology, geology, greenhouse gases, hydrology, noise, and traffic. For instance, the EIR looked at air quality, looked at the impacts associated with construction and operation, and there were feasible mitigation measures available to reduce those impacts to a level of insignificance. The last category of environmental issues were those issues that were significant, but there wasn't mitigation or enough mitigation to reduce them to a level of insignificance. Those two areas are for biological resources and traffic. With respect to biological resources, specifically, that area had to do with the equestrian facility south of Grand and the long-term degradation that could result to dune habitat due to trail erosion, increased trail usage of informal trails, and import of weed seed into that area. With respect to traffic, there were two intersections in the city of Pismo that where there would be project-specific and cumulative impacts resulting, and the mitigation that was proposed would not, in that case, reduce the levels of impacts to insignificant. This is a little more detailed explanation of biological resources, the insignificant impact that I just went through. And then this is a little more detailed explanation for traffic and the significant impacts associated with traffic that can't be reduced to a level of insignificance. The two project-specific impacts have to do with, one, Highway 1 and Price Street, the intersection there, and Highway 1 and Ocean View Drive. Those two intersections would be reduced to levels of service D and F, respectively. And that reduction is due to the contribution of traffic that would result from the proposed project. The one cumulative traffic impact was to Ocean View Drive and the Highway 1 intersection. And that's essentially a modeling of traffic, looking at the proposed traffic or looking at the traffic from the proposed project in addition to other known developments in the area that would be contributing traffic to that intersection. During the draft EIR public review period, the city of Pismo Beach did not comment on the project, and Caltrans in their comments did not comment on these traffic issues. When you have significant environmental effects associated with a project that can't be reduced to a level of insignificance, CEQA allows for the decision-making body to make a statement of overriding considerations. And basically, a statement of overriding considerations is an acknowledgement by the lead agency, in this case the city, that the project will, if approved, move forward with significant impacts, and the city recognizes that, and that the city has looked at that, looked at those environmental impacts and balanced them against other benefits that could result. For instance, the economic, legal, social, recreational, safety. There are a number of different benefits that can be looked at in balancing the environmental effects against other other issues. like Bruce said, before you have the revised final EIR, and you have a draft set of findings. In the draft set of findings, there are statements of overriding considerations, as I just explained, for the two issue areas of biological resources and traffic, that basically provide acknowledgement by the city that those impacts have been taken into consideration. Turn it back to you, Bruce.
So in conclusion tonight, as discussed, the project has a lengthy history starting about 30 years ago. As you can tell from tonight, the project's been thoroughly reviewed and has had several public hearings. It's a large, complex, project. We've provided the council and public with a summary of that information tonight, but if there's anything that we did not cover adequately, we're more than happy to respond in more detail. In wrapping it up, the project is consistent with the council goals. Those include those policies in the land use element, our economic development strategy, and the West Grand Avenue master plan. I'd also mention the project is consistent with the visioning project from 2004 that the council and community went through. The Planning Commission is recommending that the council certify the revised EIR and approve the project. I would note that there was one additional piece of correspondence that we did receive tonight that was distributed to the City Council. So with that, we would conclude the staff presentation. City staff, Allison Rolfe with Pacific Companies is here. State Park staff is here, including Andy Zilke and Bill Henry with SWCA. We're all available to answer questions.
Thank you, Bruce, Bill, and Bob. And I did want to just go back. And, Bob, your recommendation is that the council receive this information, ask questions, get clarification, and then continue this item to a future meeting.
That's correct. Ultimately, if the council so choose, it could take some interim steps, including certifying the EIR, et cetera. But that's simply up to the council's call.
Okay, very good. So let's see. What I'd like to do is normally in a process like this, you take the environmental document first. And I think, Bill, you talked about the EIR being a disclosure document and that it's information that is to be considered by the council in its decisions. And specifically, has the EIR been prepared in compliance with the California Environmental Quality Act and CEQA guidelines? And then, I guess, basically, have the potential impacts been fully analyzed? Has this been disclosed to the public? Has the public had an opportunity to comment and have those comments been responded to? And I think tonight's another opportunity for the public to give input on that. I'm sure that my colleagues have lots of questions on the environmental document, so I'm going to see if we have any questions on that, and then we can move to some of the project specifics. So who's got questions on the CEQA process and the environmental document?
I do.
Karen?
Well, I'm particularly regarding this the overriding considerations.
Okay.
Okay. In reference to the biological resources, there's a discussion about there's a paragraph that says there is also the potential that this dune area will be considered ESHA, E-S-H-A, by the California Coastal Commission. Can someone just elaborate on that for me?
Bill Henry, SWCA. Yes, ESHA, or ESHA, is an acronym that's used by the California Coastal Commission. It stands for Environmentally Sensitive Habitat Area.
Ah, okay.
Yes. and it's a coastal commission specific designation.
Okay, I thought it was something like that, but okay. So then, to continue on in that, basically in that same vein, there's a discussion that because of the degraded state, the site doesn't provide any valuable biological benefit as it currently exists. However, it could provide beneficial improvements to surrounding dune areas that would be restored to the central dune scrub habitat native to this area. Would you be able to elaborate on that just a little bit? Like where or how much, and is that possible?
Well, get at the first part of that section, it was determined to be potential ESHA, because I think that that's a decision that it was felt that would be best made by a coastal commission. The area has the potential, albeit a very low potential, to have sensitive plants and sensitive species, and it was deemed to be a potential area should restoration need to occur in that surrounding area.
Okay, so it's been degraded because of all the traffic and all the movement and so on that has gone on throughout the years in that particular area?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and that and non-native plant species
right.
have degraded it as well. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. I think that's it for me at the moment.
Okay. Any questions to my left?
I have some.
Okay. Debbie?
I have a lot of questions. I'm trying to sort out which ones are relevant just specifically to this question. The CEQA findings, are those related to the EIR?
Yeah.
So I can go forward with those. Okay. So I have some questions on the site drainage and grading and the drainage to Meadow Creek. And I know that it's disturbed, and I know that drainage flows to it from Pismo Beach and Oceano. What I'm wondering about is how are we going to fix it if it's already messed up? We can't stop Oceano and Pismo Beach from draining to it.
Mm-hmm. Good evening, Council. Greg Ray, Public Works Director. The requirement for the project would be not necessarily to fix a condition that currently exists, but instead not to, as a result of the project, cause an additional impact. In this case, if you're referring to flooding in particular, the project on site proposes a number of ponds and a drainage system that would take site drainage and route that drainage to those ponds. Those ponds would act both as detention and infiltration basins, and in a hydrology and hydraulics report prepared by a consulting engineering firm out of San Diego, they determined that through the construction of those ponds, the post-development flow rate, peak flow rate, and total quantity of runoff tributary to Meadow Creek would be reduced from pre-project to post-project. The difference would be reduced to zero. So essentially, there would be no additional impact on the Meadow Creek drainage basin.
Thank you. That's very encouraging. So that's taking me a little bit off target here, or off the track. Those basins that we're using to keep the flow of water on site and not to further cause any problems with Meadow Creek, is it possible to use native plants in those basins? And is that what we're proposing there?
Native plants are proposed throughout the site. The basins themselves, in order to be effective as detention basins, will have planting to some extent in them and around them. but to the extent that actual native planting is going to be appropriate for something that would be regularly inundated, not necessarily, no.
Okay. So where possible to create that particular improvement or that particular zero problem, zero damage, and if possible, then we would use native plants, but where not possible, we'll use drought tolerant. Is that right? Or we'll use...
No, the plantings in the basins themselves, mm-hmm. and these are fairly small, you know, pond areas, those would be plants that are more suited to being fully covered in water for a period of time and then to drying out during dry periods, and that could survive and tolerate both.
Okay. I guess my concern is that I'd like, since we have this incredible opportunity to do do native plants and to continue to get closer to where things were at one time. It's a one-time opportunity, and so I'm just wanting to ensure that we will, where possible, use native plants, unless there's a very good reason not to.
I'll elaborate a little bit more. One of the whole design concepts in the project was really to extend the dunes that used to be on site back into the site, and so all of those dune features on site will be exclusively native. They will be trying to emulate what's on the other side of the wall, if you will. So I can tell you the landscape architect, in working with state parks, it is really primarily native landscaping first, then drought tolerant second, and then there's very little proportionally of ornamental landscaping adjacent to buildings.
Okay. So then I'm going off track again, but it's still along the same lines of my thinking. How do you make a fake dune? I know there are going to be some artificial dunes on site. That's intriguing to me. Since dunes change all the time anyway, how do you make a fake one?
I may have to defer to the applicant, but in essence, you will import or somehow provide sand on the site, and it is true. You will try to stabilize the dune will be the important thing. Mm-hmm. So it really will need an intense planting effort in order to try to stabilize it so that it isn't moving. Again, two types of dunes, unstable that are moving and changing and ones that are vegetated and stable. So I would argue that these are going to be stable dunes that they're going to want to bring onto the site.
Thank you. And I'll ask the applicant more on that one later. I do have a few other questions on this. Good answers so far. With regard to the horse area, those of us who have dogs and walk on the beach carry little bags to clean up the mess. And I've had a lot of feedback from locals saying, how do we get the horse mess cleaned up? Is there any way of doing that?
I believe there's actually a mitigation measure that speaks to that and creating a maintenance plan. And I think some of the equestrian groups have even indicated that they would like to be part of that as well in helping to maintain and keep the site up.
Thank you. And also, under air quality, one of the things mentioned was the support of the Slow Car Free program. And I'm wondering, who pays for that when we get involved with that? Is that going to be another cost to the city, or...
My assumption is it would be borne by the applicant if that's a requirement. There are some of the mitigation measures that come from APCD are more of a laundry list, and some ultimately can be implemented, maybe not all of them.
Okay.
So we will ultimately have to work with APCD to determine which ones are best suited for this project.
Okay, thank you. Oh, and also it mentioned in under bioimpact, mentioned that the city doesn't have a reclaimed water program. I thought we were doing something along those lines now.
I think that reference is, do we actually have water reclamation program coming from the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District, and we do not at this time.
Yeah. I see. Okay. Specifically that, not necessarily the gray water
issue.
Okay. And I'm wondering, I know that we've addressed the impacts of traffic, and I was just wondering if anything specific has been done with regard to the butterfly traffic, because that it's so dangerous there, and it's going to be right on the border of where we are. And I don't. I just wondered if any thought had been given to that or any work done on that.
I mean, the traffic study as part of the EIR evaluates only the level of service on the streets, looking at what is the additional trips to the collective street system, what impacts it has as far as is the level of service dropped below D, because C is the city threshold. So the analysis really is only on trip distribution and assigning those trips. So it's only a technical study in that regard.
Okay. All right. So we may come up with some other ideas for mitigating that, like walkways that go from the train to the butterflies or... okay. And I've also noticed under the transportation and traffic that I don't think we mentioned the train station in there. And it seems to me that that's a huge part of mitigation in terms of alternative ways of people getting here. And obviously, a huge part of our marketing, and we want this to be a destination for Amtrak. So I understand that that's this report's done and dusted. However, I just wanted to raise that. And that's not relevant to this. I noticed then under groundwater quality, they talk about testing of Grover beach wells that indicate no volatile organics. But the date of the test is 1992, which was 20 years ago. Is that okay? Is that good enough?
Probably, yes. considering the site itself in particular, mm-hmm. First of all, their VOCs would in particular be related mostly to gas station underground tank storage, and also note that the city of Grover Beach itself tests its wells. We test water mm-hmm. quality monthly.
Right.
And so if the city wells had any indication that our groundwater was being contaminated by any outside source, we would know first. In this case, between our wells and this site, there's really very little going on related to that. So a 92 test is probably as relevant as any.
Thank you. I feel much better about that. Appreciate that. I'm almost there here. That's all I had as far as the CEQA is concerned.
Okay. Phyllis?
Thank you. Do we have any idea the reaction of the Coastal Commission? Because I had looked at some older correspondence where they're not too happy with some aspects of this project. And so I'm just curious as to if you've gotten any recent feedback.
The project applicant and staff initiated early conversations with the Coastal Commission to inform them about the project, and we've continued to do that. There are a few issues that they continue to have concerns about. I would just want to clarify that that's the Coastal Commission staff that are raising those issues. Ultimately, the Coastal Commission is the one that will weigh in on, make the final decision, and so as this project moves forward, there will be more discussions when we submit our application at Coastal Commission.
Okay. The current equestrian parking area is all dirt, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And where it's moving to in the dunes, what's the surface going to be there?
It would be a decomposed granite. It would be a surface that's not asphalt and yet would accommodate equestrians.
Okay, and I did notice some referrals to 100-year floods over there by Meadow Creek. And I believe I saw that there was going to be quite a few permeable pavers. Can you comment on that?
Well, a small portion of the project is actually within the 100-year floodplain. What will happen is, as a result of grading, the majority of those areas, except for a small portion of the parking lot, will be removed from the 100-year floodplain. The applicant has proposed the concept of having numerous permeable pavers And that's really just there to reduce impervious surfaces so you don't have to have more retention so that we can get more water directly into the groundwater table.
Okay, and let's see. Okay. That's all for now. I have other questions later.
Okay. So I've got a long list. Well, maybe not. So I want to start with, I know there's an item later on our agenda dealing with the issue of public improvements and a financing plan. So I'm just curious to know how that might affect the mitigation monitoring plan regarding responsibilities and things of that nature. And so I was wondering on page 7-3, there's a measure that's AES, mitigation measure 3, requiring the submittal of a utility plan as a responsibility of the applicant. So maybe the question really is, in this mitigation monitoring, is there some, would there be some flexibility to kind of massage who's the what the responsibilities are?
Yeah, recognize that all of the mitigation measures, conditions of approval for this project start with the applicant. And CEQA isn't concerned about who carries out the condition or the mitigation measure. They're just concerned that it's taken care of. So if ultimately another party other than the applicant is responsible for something, it would be implemented and through the mitigation monitoring plan.
Very good. Good answer. Let me move to page 729 and 730. And this, you had talked about the APCD measures in here are advisory, but the way I read this measure, in not only as far as the mitigation, but also in the monitoring plan, it talks about shall. And what I'm particularly concerned about is when we talk about exceeding Title 24 by 20%. So, and just a clarification on that.
Staff had the same concern as well as the applicant, and we discussed this directly with APCD staff. I think in the clean air plan adopted by APCD, they have this list of mitigation measures, but we did get documentation from them that in this case, it is up to the local jurisdiction to determine whether they are feasible. And what was interesting here is we didn't really get into this, but with a LEED certified silver project, this project is already going to incorporate numerous energy efficiency features. And even the applicant went back to see, well, with a LEED silver building, would we be able to reduce it by 20%? And the answer is no. The Title 24 energy standards in California have become so stringent, or they've raised the bar so much that all projects built today are very energy efficient. And so even with LEED silver, you're still not going to exceed 20%.
Okay, so then if it's advisory and if the council says we want to make sure that it's advisory, because as you know in the vernacular, a should is a guideline, a shall is a mandate. Yeah. And so so then the question to you or even Bill is, if the council says, yeah, we believe that is excessive and we want to eliminate that, does that change the determination that has been made in the environmental impact report?
I think the council certainly has the option of changing that particular requirement to should, if they would like, rather than shall, to take away the mandatory requirement.
Okay. And then it looks like there are some mitigation measures and some applicant responsibilities that talks about redesigning parking areas, storm drains, and other things. So I'm on page 735. The measure is DESMM6. My question is, has that been addressed? And if it has already, is there a reason for this to continue as a mitigation measure?
This particular storm drain they're talking about is on the south side of Grand Avenue for the equestrian facility. That facility would create some drain drainage. There was a very small encroachment into a willow area to the east, and basically that would easily be redesigned as part of the final construction documents to avoid that.
Okay.
You would have to refer to the grading and drainage plan, I think, to find that small section of storm drain that encroaches.
Okay. And then moving to, and I had a lot more, but your answer to my first question eliminated quite a few of those. But I'm on page 739, and this is mitigation measure TCMM3, and this is the requirement for a circulation parking plan.
Yeah, the original project that was reviewed as part of the draft ER, there have since been changes in the parking lot and the circulation, which address the majority of those.
Okay.
But we did retain the mitigation measures, so staff still has the ability to go back as far as part of the final plan review to make sure everything works correctly. And I think this also was to speak to make sure that there would be adequate emergency service access, fire department vehicles in particular.
Okay, because I just want to get clarification that basically, should the council approve this project subsequently, and obviously we still have to do a coastal commission, that you're not asking for a specific study more so than you're going to review the plans that are that have been submitted by the project proponent?
The latter is correct, yes.
Okay. Just want to be clear. And then I wanted to get to this issue regarding the city of Pismo Beach, and I think Bill touched on this earlier about there's only two particular impacts that could not be mitigated to a level of insignificance, and one of which deals with the city of Pismo Beach and some existing traffic conditions. So you've had conversation with the city of Pismo?
Yeah, I'll start, and maybe Greg can complete the answer here. But the two intersections in question currently do not operate at a level of service C, and these are both in the city of Pismo Beach. When the traffic consultant looked at this, he assigned some trips to the lodge coming at somebody that would get off in Pismo Beach off of Highway 101 at the Highway 1 exit and would drive all the way through town to get to the lodge. So first, one has to question, somebody might do that once or twice, but after driving through there on a Saturday, they might not do that again. Yeah. But the fact that it would just add one additional trip on Highway 1 going through Pismo Beach, I'll give you the example of Ocean View, is just a side street. And if you're sitting there trying to turn left onto Highway 1, in theory, if you add any additional trips, that's going to further your delay or how long you wait there. So that's considered a traffic impact just by virtue of having to wait longer. And so that's what increases, or actually decreases, the level of service. So early on, as soon as this was identified, we did meet with Pismo staff, and we made sure they were involved, both the city of Pismo Beach and Caltrans. Neither commented or had any concerns.
Okay, and so then the logical follow-up to that is, are we able to get something in writing from them? And I'm asking that just to make sure, because I'll tell you, based on my experience, and Greg, you can address this, it's highly unusual for a city to have a level of service C for an intersection and then to have that apply to what appears to be a non-signalized intersection as well. So I was just going to wanted to just make sure that we're not just taking silence to mean that it's not a concern.
City Council, to further answer that question, the two intersections in particular, if there were an impact fee or a future project in the city, within the city of Pismo Beach's general plan circulation element, that were to address future level of service at those two intersections, there would be an opportunity then for this project applicant to contribute either to construction of that project or to the payment of a pro rata share of the impact fee. In this case, neither exists. They have no project plans to improve the level of service at either of those intersections through the circulation element.
Okay.
So that's really the end of that, unless they come up with something else or had come up with something else. We met with them, and I believe we do have an email train that suggests that they have no further comment.
Very good.
Probably in risk of over-answering the question, just one little detail that might add to understanding of this. If you look at the cumulative level service estimate for cumulative conditions without the project, that means not considering that this project get developed, at the Highway 1 Price Street intersection, the estimated level service will be level service F. No project. At Highway 1 in Ocean View, the cumulative level service, no project, will be level service F. With the project, the level service in both cases will be F. No change. And that speaks to Bruce's discussion about one trip, if you're already level service F, is a significant impact. So,
therefore, hence having to adopt findings in a statement of overriding consideration, and that's why it's a class one impact. Gotcha. Okay. So those are all my questions on the environmental document. I do have one maybe for the city attorney, though. I'm just curious, tonight I know that the city manager had talked about continuing this project to either a date certain or to a future meeting. If the council chooses to take action, let's say, and certify the EIR, does it have to do it all, or could the mitigation monitoring plan be deferred? I see it's actually integral to the environmental document.
I think that my recommendation would be that the entire document is adopted at the time the council wishes to act on it.
Very good. Okay. So then let me see, do any council members have any questions on anything else on the project before I go to the public?
So are we going to talk about the building itself, or that is not part of the issue tonight?
I think if there's some things that you would like, that we would like to have clarified, it's probably a good point to have that discussion.
Okay.
But I think as staff is recommending is that we either continue this item or contemplate whether it is beneficial to certify the EIR to take action on the local coastal program amendments and then the zoning amendments, and then to defer future actions based on our discussion on the item that's number four tonight.
And that would be just so that the public knows?
That's just not just for the public knows, but I think if there's an opportunity for the council to get some clarification from staff and ask those questions, it's probably a good time to ask those kind of questions.
Okay. All right. Well, I did have a couple questions then before we give it to the public. Question is, with the change in the conference center, is the conference center going to be jointly owned between the state and the city, even though Pacifica is building it?
Well, I think part of the discussion on financing later will talk about what the ownership would be, but I think it is in the state park. Whoever constructs that building or operates it and maintains it, it is basically like the hotel. These are being built for the state park. And in 50 years, no matter who owns and operates them, they will be turned over to the state park. So,
okay.
Does that help answer that?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
And I think there's some state representatives here who will have an opportunity to give some additional information.
Okay. The only other question I had was in reference to the lead, I guess, silver. I did not see any solar capacity on this building.
Okay. I would defer you to the applicant. I believe they looked into that.
Okay. So I'm going to get to you. Okay. Debbie, you have any other questions?
I have questions for the applicant.
Okay, very good. Bill? Karen?
No, thank you.
Okay. I think people have been very patient with us as we have received this presentation and asked our questions. So I'm going to open this up to the public, and what I would like to do is give the applicant's representative an opportunity to address the council on this item. So, Allison, if you want to come up. And I don't know if you have a presentation or you're just going to answer questions. So,
Honorable Mayor Schulz, members of the City Council, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to you tonight. My name is Allison, and I'm the project manager for the developer Pacifica Companies. And I don't have a formal presentation tonight. I am here to answer questions and address comments or concerns. I just wanted to say a couple of words. First of all, this has been an incredible collaboration with both the city and state parks, and it's been several years in the making. We've appreciated how hard your staff has worked. They've been incredible to work with. And we also have very much enjoyed working with state parks. We've, as you've heard, we've been to Planning Commission twice recently, once in July, once in February. And at those hearings, we actually gave more of a qualitative presentation. So I had our landscape architect, our architect here, and the three of us gave a qualitative presentation where we got into a lot more just details about what our intention was for the site and how we got to where we are now. So I'm happy to give you any of that information if you'd like it tonight or potentially at your next hearing if you're interested. But most of it, Bruce has done a great job of covering. I think the only other thing that I would add is that Pacifica we have 34 hotels, and we operate all of them. We have the Hampton, which is where I'm staying tonight, in Arroyo Grande, and the Inn in Morro Bay. So we're very interested in this area. We love it. We think it's gorgeous. And we're particularly interested in coastal properties. I actually am managing another project in San Diego. It's called the Seacoast Inn. We're under construction, and we're opening in November. And that's also very similar. It's a LEED certified hotel, and it's in the coastal zone. We had to get Coastal Commission approval. And we actually have several four-star chains that are already getting excited about our hotel, and everybody wants to be a part of it because of its location. And Grover Beach, I think, will be even more exciting, and hopefully we'll put the Central Coast and this area in particular on the map. And we definitely plan to market, I just want to be clear, to market to Amtrak as well as doing other creative marketing, because this will open as a boutique hotel. So we want to make sure we can do our own creative and uniquely suited marketing. We designed the site to really try, from a land use standing point of view, land use planning point of view, to make the best use of the site. So, for example, you have a public picnic area there now that isn't very utilized by the public because it's not really planned as ideally as it could be. And so what we've kept in mind the entire time is which uses are the highest priority uses, and those are the public uses, and how do we get those closest to the west side, closest to the ocean, and really make them work. So we're taking out that hardscape picnic area. We're bringing dunes back onto the site. We're creating picnic platforms that are integrated with the boardwalk. Some of them will be covered, some of them won't. And we've really tried to enhance the functioning for the public. We want this to feel like a public space. And although it's a lodge and conference center with interpretive signs, public pathways, we really want to invite people onto the site and have it feel like a visitor-serving use, which it is. So, you know, there's so much more I could say about that, but I don't want to take up a lot of your time. I just wanted to say thank you very much for the for the opportunity, and we really enjoyed working with your staff, and I'm sitting right here if you have any other questions. Should I answer the solar question quickly?
If you would, that would be great. And actually stay there because I think we do have some other questions for you. Okay.
Sure. Thank you, Mayor Schulz. So the building will be LEED Silver, and that'll make it the first LEED Silver building on the coast of California. We're pretty excited about that, and that's a state parks requirement. So I'd like to say we would have done it anyway. I think we would have, but we have to do it because it's on state parks property. And as a result, we will be incorporating solar. We haven't designed that yet. We have to get into the construction level documentation in order to know exactly how much solar we need. But we will do a mix of both photovoltaics and solar hot water heating. And we'll probably do even more solar hot water heating. So we'll just see how that plays out once we have the mechanical engineering work done.
Very good. Debbie, I think you said you had some questions.
I do. One of them for me was a math question. there was a description of the conference center, and it mentioned there being conference rooms to accommodate 20 to 200. And I thought we had a conference center that was over 11,000 square feet, so I couldn't figure out why are we only accommodating 20 to
200. I don't know if Bruce knows, but I should also tell you just really quickly that in addition to the conference center, which is just over 11,000 square feet, if you add in the meeting space in the main building, we actually have over 15,000 square feet.
Okay.
And we plan on big occasions to use the main building and the conference center in conjunction with each other. In fact, the plaza, which is a turnaround, it's a traffic turnaround area between the two buildings, under certain circumstances, we can actually block that off, and we can make the plaza part of the outdoor meeting space or pre-function area. So we potentially have 36,000 square feet of space. So it's a significant amount of indoor-outdoor space, but I can't tell you exactly how many that would accommodate.
Thank you. That was the second math problem I was having some trouble understanding was how we went to 36,000 from 11. So that helps me there. And as far as the plantings, I don't know if we can actually dictate that it be native at this stage of the game, but I'm wondering where it's not native, what's the justification?
Thank you for asking that question. It is our goal to use primarily native plants. The circumstances where we wouldn't use natives would be in, as was mentioned earlier, the basins where the natives wouldn't be able to endure that sort of inundation of water. And in that case, we're envisioning reedy materials and materials that actually reflect what's already in Meadow Creek. In addition to bringing the dunes from the west into the site, we're trying to create a habitat mosaic where we're also bringing the riparian west, and they're going to integrate with each other. So there will be some riparian and wetland-looking plants coming from Meadow Creek onto our site, and there'll be dune plants coming from the west east onto our site, and they'll be integrated together. The other place where we would use ornamentals would be in planters and that sort of thing, just on the patios and adjacent to the building. But they would definitely be non-invasive. We would not use any invasive species. Our landscape architect went to school at San Luis Obispo Cal Poly, and he's been talking to state parks biologists and other local biologists about which plants to use. He's very interested in doing environmentally sustainable landscaping.
Thank you. And the other question I had was, how do you make a fake dune?
Oh, good question. Thank you for asking that, because it gives me an opportunity to tell you one of my favorite things about this project. So Bruce answered it correctly, that there's stabilized and unstabilized dunes, and most of the dunes we'll be creating within the project. They weren't included in tonight's presentation, but we do have some artist renderings of what that might look like. And actually, I think they're in your environmental impact report. But the best example I can give you is Asilomar, if you've ever been there, it's nestled right in the dunes, and the sand comes right up to the decks. We want that to happen. So we're designing the decks and the foundations of the building in such a way that sand can blow right up against the buildings, and as it shifts, it'll just be part of it. That's how we want it to look.
Thank you. That's wonderful. I think that's all I had here.
Okay. Phyllis?
Yes, I have a question. Okay, thank you. The sand under the building brought up an interesting thought. I know that there's a lot of problem in Oceano with buildup of sand and the difficulty to remove it because of the Coastal Commission. And I'm wondering what the thought is on that. You're going to have a buildup of sand, and suddenly they're going to see you can't move it. Okay. That's one thought. The other is, what about the existing plants that are there now? We have quite a few palms. Are those going to be remaining? And I did notice on your plant list, which I don't have with me, it was on that rather large document we got, you talked about New Zealand Christmas trees, which I've already mentioned before, extremely invasive. They go for plumbing. They go for foundations. And the city of San Francisco is extremely unhappy that they put them in. So I guess my concern is that eventually when we get to the plants, that we have an idea of what we're putting in before we put it in.
Thank you. Okay. Those are really good comments. I can't answer them. I can call our landscape architect. He is available, so I can get answers and maybe come back to the podium. The New Zealand Christmas trees, I think that he may have been referring, are there two on site? There's two trees on site that we're keeping. But I didn't know that we were introducing New Zealand Christmas trees. Yeah. So let me give him a call, if that's okay, Mayor Scholes. And if you'd like the information, I could come back up to the podium.
Well,
or
if you can bring
that back in the future.
Yeah, I was just thinking you can answer that in the future. Because,
sure.
You know, I think to the extent that if they are trees that are going to be invasive and has the environmental impact report, you've analyzed them adequately, and if it was an impact, what has been the mitigation? So it sounds like that is not, there was no discussion of that. But, yeah, why don't you write that down for future discussion.
Thank you very much. I want to be clear that we have asked him to not use any invasive plants.
And think about how they get down to the beach. I wonder if getting to the beach, there's a road that curves down and goes onto the beach, which curves right around the side of the equestrian area. So how are we going to get the horses onto the beach without having to compete with the cars?
Well, Mr. Mayor, maybe
yes.
I can answer that.
City Manager.
Since I'm an equestrian myself, currently there is a trail that will go directly from the equestrian facility westward to the beach.
I saw that on the.
They use that now.
Yeah, okay.
They don't need to use the ramp. The other is it would be to go out the dune trail all the way out to the access road at the south side, and that's another way to access the beach.
Thank you. That was
okay.
All.
Any questions to my right? I think you both said no. So I did want to ask Allison a question regarding. I know you had said you'd been working with city staff and the state folks, but I know you've been following some of the conversation up here. So, what is Pacifica's take on the EIR? Do you feel like it has been done and prepared in compliance with CEQA? And do you have any questions of that?
Thank you, Mayor Scholes. We've been working closely with SWCA, with Bill and Emily, and we think that the environmental impact report was very well done, and we would support, you know, taking action on it tonight if that's what you choose to do, but definitely feel comfortable with it.
Okay. And then they had also alluded to possibly some action with the LCP amendment and the zone change. Does Pacifica have any concerns with those actions being in advance of the project?
No.
Okay. Very good.
We would support it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I see Mr. Zilke from the state is here. Andy, did you have anything? Did you have a presentation, or did you hear any questions that required further clarification from the state? Okay. So then I do have, looks like about five speaker request forms. So, or four. So the first is Doug Lesage. And then after Doug will be Bruce Van Voort.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and the Council. Thank you for making such good information available to us, and the young lady from Pacifica is great. We definitely need this, and it's a great project. They need to see some plans of that myself.
Okay, and then you had a question regarding, you said you didn't see anything discussing wildlife per se.
Just brought that up since I'm on the County Fish and Game Commission.
Okay, great. We're going to take notes to these, and then we'll get a response to your inquiries.
Thank you.
Thank you for those comments. Bruce Van Voort, and then Bruce will be followed by Richard Waller.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Council members. My major concern is the parking issue. Bruce did explain it correctly, but leaving out one item. There's 250 parking spaces in the dirt area that are not being replaced. That's a reduction of 60% of the available parking down at that area. And if I'm wrong, please let me know that. The parking area down there right now is, to put it mildly, 10 pounds of sausage in a 5-pound bucket, and you're eliminating 60% of the bucket now. And I could be wrong, but you'd have to tell me that. That was my concern. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Bruce. Okay. Mr. Waller, followed by, I think, this Stephanie Green.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and Council. I'm Richard Waller. I'm on the Board of Directors of Backcountry Horsemen of California Los Padres Unit, We have about 250 members locally here in the two counties. I'm also on the board of directors of Backcountry Horsemen of California with about 3,000 members. We're not a riding club. We're a political action group. We want to thank and commend the city, the staff, state parks, and the applicant for the work that they've done to retain equestrian parking. We want to offer our services in any way that is needed, whether it's maintenance, habitat restoration, removal of invasive species, trail, removal of use trails, anything that is needed, just talk to us. We'll do it.
Thank you, Mr. Waller. And does the city manager have your contact information? Did you have something?
I said get his phone number.
Stephanie Green.
Greetings. Please include my letter in the record also. And I object to the project. The LPC and the draft of the ER is too big, and it's built on wetlands. And there's not enough land that has been allocated to equestrian staging, and it needs at least 1 acre for future use. The equestrians are a class of park user specified in the general plan. The zoning ordinance setting minimum parking for hotel is outdated and does not allow enough room for parking, and the Coastal Commission will not okay parking south on the dunes. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Green. And for the record, we do have your letter, and the city clerk does have it and will be entered into the record. Okay. I don't have any additional speaker request forms, but I'll see if there's anyone that did not get to fill out one, would like to address the council on this item. Please come forward, state your name and city residence for the record.
And Mayor Scholes and Honorable Council, I just had to come tonight because I've been around for a long time, know what it took to put this project together, how many councils have worked on it, how many city managers have worked on it, and I think all of you and our city manager have to be commended for finally getting this to some point where we're going to have it. And like Debbie said, I think we have to also stress the train, because how many people can now come, will be able to come to Grover without a car, okay, and, you know, be able to use all the facilities and walk in Grover. And I think that it's just such a positive thing for our poor little city. We need this income desperately.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Sue. Okay, please come forward.
My name is Valerie Niveau, and I live in Pismo Beach. Previously lived in Atascadero, and I'm a member of Atascadero Horsemen's Club. And I want to say thank you for all the work that's gone on. And I just kind of have one major concern, and that is that there is no plan B for the equestrians if the parking lot does not get approved, the suggested parking lot does not get approved by the Coastal Commission. And I would like to see that some plan B gets put into motion, because if everything starts going and then that doesn't go through, we're kind of just sitting there. This experience, I'm not thinking that's going to happen, or if it's going to take a couple of years of red tape or something. So, that's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Valerie. Appreciate those comments. Okay, seeing no one come forward, I'm going to just close the public comment section tonight, but at a subsequent meeting, we'll reopen it and give folks another opportunity to comment specifically on the project. But we really appreciate your input and you being here this evening. So with that, there were some comments that were brought up that I'm hoping staff, you were tracking this, and I'm thinking staff and Ms. Rolfe as well as state folks. Mr. Lesage brought up the issue of maintenance. So, Bruce, can you address that? And then I think he had also talked about wildlife preservation, so maybe you and your cohorts can address that.
As far as maintenance, I'm the project site itself would be maintained by a combination of state parks and Pacifica and perhaps even the city. I'm speculating that one of Mr. Lesage's concerns is Lesage, as you drive on it today, is a private street. It is not a public street that is maintained by the city. So I think the question becomes, who would maintain the section from Highway 1 to the bridge? Because that is the private section, again, that I think would be currently maintained by Mr. Lesage. Once you get to the bridge and onto the site, again, that will be maintained as part of the project. So right now, yes, there will be increased trips on Lesage as a result of the project. The maintenance, though, at this time, there's been no discussion of how that would be maintained other than currently through Mr. Lesage.
So there is opportunity for some discussion with Mr. Lesage on that specific
correct.
Aspect.
Correct.
Okay.
As far as wildlife habitat, I mean, there's a combination of things here. There were no endangered animals, threatened animals through the surveys that were found on the site. Part of the whole habitat issue here is even though going south of Grand, you would lose some dune habitat, that is offset by not only increased enhanced analysis in the final EIR. There were several sites looked at, and most were eliminated because the impacts or most likely biological impacts didn't make those better candidate sites. But certainly there is a very rough concept plan in the alternative section of the EIR. If ultimately the Coastal Commission determined that you could not use the area south of Grand, then the idea is to incorporate it into the parking area, likely at the southeast corner of the parking lot, again on the north side of Grand. So I think it's been stated by not only state parks but the city that we're committed to continuing the equestrian use. If it does not work south of Grand, it will be incorporated on the site on the north side of Grand. And also responding to the other question asked by Ms. Green, again, as I indicated, the Coastal Commission staff has said that the staff believes that south of Grand is an environmentally sensitive habitat area, ESHA. But again, I think the joint authority, again, the city and state, in looking at this project, have felt that the benefits of moving the equestrian area south of Grand, as Councilmember Peterson noted, it's just a much safer location for the equestrians. You're eliminating the crossing of Grand Avenue. So at this point, you know, we're recommending moving forward and going to the Coastal Commission and trying to make the case that the benefits of going on the south side of Grand outweigh remaining on the north side.
And I think to just add a point of emphasis on that, when Mr. Waller, I believe it was Mr. Waller,
yes,
had asked, had mentioned that they would be willing to, what could they do to assist? And I think that would probably be something that could assist this project along, should the council approve the project as designed right now, correct? And then I'd like you to touch on the issue. I think Bruce, I think he just left the room, asked a question regarding parking, and I think Ms. Green even talked about this. So I want you, can you talk about parking, the process for how it was calculated? And then I know that in some correspondence that was in here, people were documenting probably the worst parking day in the 365, which is June 4th of July. So maybe you can talk about that and then talk about, are there other options for overflow parking in when
area? And I think also over the years, as off-road vehicle usage has grown, you've had those vehicles using this as a temporary parking area as well. And I think certainly it has served as an overflow parking area. The question is, how is the property best used? What is the highest and best use? And what has been planned for the site for 30 years? So, yes, the project does keep the 160 existing paved parking spaces. what State Parks was concerned about and wanted to have overflow, if you will, parking for to accommodate trailers, and that's why at that area in the southeast corner, it's, the lot has been specifically designed to accommodate trailers and RVs. But in those peak weekends that you have during the summer, you will not obviously have this area available for parking.
Okay. So I was asking you that because obviously in the parking calculation, you counted formal spaces that are paved and that are marked, not a vacant lot that has been used temporarily because of convenience, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And then I wanted to also discuss the issue of will there be on-street parking allowed? And then also the question of are there other public lots and plans that could help replace some of that parking? In particular, I'm thinking of the lot between behind Beach Place, the public owned lot, and then the train station expansion project.
As far as additional public parking, yes, the city has one parking lot currently behind the Beach Place development on Grand, between 2nd and 3rd. So that's always available for overflow parking. And again, is the council's aware of the train station expansion project would add about 40 additional parking spaces to the existing lot next to the depot. So there will be additional public parking that would be signed and would direct people for overflow parking.
Okay, very good.
Question then.
Thank you. Yes.
Currently, right now, along Grand from Highway 1 to the beach, there is no parking.
That's correct.
Why? It's a pretty wide street. There's lots of space.
So I believe that those were a majority of the comments that were raised by the public, the members who are here this evening. So at this point, we need, as a council, need to have a discussion regarding are you comfortable either continuing this item to a date certain or date uncertain? Also, the question that staff, I think Bruce had talked about, is are we comfortable with considering, and maybe Bruce, you can put the slide up. You called it entitlement. I think probably more appropriately, it's probably actions. So tonight, do we want to consider certifying the final EIR, which includes the draft EIR, all comments to that on that document, responses to those comments, and then the revised. I'm not confused, but I was just curious as to why we called it a revised final EIR when in fact it's not final until there's action taken. But I think everyone kind of gets the gist. So the first three items does the council see any benefit to moving forward on those three and deferring action on the other two because there is an item later on our agenda, and I know that the applicant would prefer to have some discussion on that before any final decision on the actual project is made. So let me see what the council's feeling is tonight. So the question that I have for everyone is, we need to have the consensus. Are you feeling like we need to continue everything to a subsequent meeting? Obviously, the public will still have an opportunity to comment then, or based on what's been presented tonight, because this has been a lot of information, a complex project with multiple actions that need to occur. Are you comfortable taking action on the first three and then deferring action or continuing action on the CDP and the site and architectural plans?
So what would be the benefit to doing that?
Well, staff, do you want to chime in here?
Yeah.
I don't want to dominate the conversation.
First of all, it's not uncommon at all for jurisdictions to consider the environmental impact report and certify it. All you're doing is saying that it has been prepared in compliance with mm-hmm. CEQA. So it's not uncommon that be a totally different step. So, again, there would be staff would prefer to have that. We have to file our application to them.
Okay, so mainly it's they're relatively time-sensitive things that we could get a jump on.
Yes.
Okay. I'm comfortable with the EIR myself. And
okay.
The other two items, I don't have a problem with those as well, so I would be willing to go forward.
Very good. Mayor Pro Tem, you've been very quiet. What do you have?
Well, I have heard nothing tonight in listening to the presentations and all of the questions that would cause me to hesitate certifying the final EIR. So I'm definitely in support of going ahead, moving forward with the certification. And if you want me to make a motion, I'll do that.
If you are prepared to make a motion, if there's no additional discussion, make a motion and see where it goes.
I move that we adopt the resolution certifying the revised final EIR.
I'll second that motion.
Could we have a little discussion? There was a shall and a should issue that Mayor Scholes mentioned, and I didn't know if that should be a part of that.
Oh, and the mitigation.
Very good.
Yeah.
So, Bruce?
I wasn't quick enough to get the reference to where it was.
It's 7:39, I think.
7:29.
Of the of the monitoring plan.
Is that what you were talking about?
In the environmental document.
Yeah, in particular, it was page 7-30 at the bottom of the table. The applicant shall demonstrate the design of the proposed buildings or structures exceed Title 24 requirements by a minimum of 20%. So changing, again, we've certainly had this discussion, but I think the council can change that to should, and that would not make it a mandatory.
Okay.
Okay. With that correction.
Are we taking each one separate, the first three?
Yes, each one will be done separately.
All right.
Okay, so that's the motion with that one correction.
And so just so we're clear, the resolution that we have before us is not only certifying the revised final EIR, but it is also adoption of findings and statement of writing considerations in the mitigation monitoring and reporting program, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
And I would clarify, too, that what we're really doing is changing the mitigation measures that are in the resolution.
Coastal program, Bruce, can you just highlight that again, and we'll see if there's someone prepared to make a motion on this item.
As we indicated, there were, I'll say, four minor changes that had to be made to the local coastal program in order for the project to be consistent with that document. So that is part of the resolution that's provided in a legislative format. And we'd be happy to answer any specific questions if you had them.
Okay. Are there any specific questions, or is someone prepared to make a motion on this item?
I'm happy to make that motion.
Okay.
I move that we adopt the resolution of the City Council of the City of Grover Beach approving a local coastal program amendment associated with development permit application number 10003 for the Grover Beach Lodge and Conference Center project.
I second that.
Okay. There is a motion and a second. Any additional discussion on the motion? Okay, seeing none. Roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. And then the zoning map amendment. So, Mr. Buckingham, just again remind us of the item.
This is a zoning map amendment. It is an ordinance. It needs to be introduced by first reading tonight. It simply changes the area on the south side of Grand from coastal open space to public facilities to allow for the equestrian parking area.
Very good. Someone prepared to make a motion on this item?
I'll make that motion. An ordinance of the City Council of the City of Grover Beach amending Article 9, Planning and Zoning Regulations, Chapter 1 of the Grover Beach Municipal Code, amending the zoning map associated with development permit application number 10003 for the Grover Beach Lodge and Conference Project.
I'll second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second.
Honorable Mayor and Council members, for the record, the motion includes waiver of the reading of the entire ordinance. Is that correct?
Yes. Indeed.
And this is the first, this will be a first reading, and you'll come back with a second. Okay. Okay, there's a motion and a second and a clarification. If there's no additional discussion, roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. And then, as I understand staff's recommendation, you are recommending that we continue
yes.
the coastal development permit and the site and architectural plans to a...
I would suggest a date certain at this point. I would that would enable us.
What do we have to work out?
Well, it there's two things. One, it will allow for an additional public comment, and certainly that's a month's time would be appropriate. The other is related to the financing issues, and they need to. They're not directly related to this item, but it's in my recommendation that they be presented at the same time.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, at the same meeting. So does someone want to, City Attorney, do we need a motion to continue this to a date certain, or is that
yes,
a
I think
direction?
That what would be appropriate is to have a motion to continue the public hearing on this item to a date certain, and... request that staff obviously brings the remainder of this project to you at that time, understanding the public hearing will be continued and public will have an opportunity to speak to the remaining items at that time.
Very
I'll
good.
I'll make that motion.
Okay. There's a motion. There's a second.
And that date being April 16th at 6:30.
I'll second the motion.
Okay. There's a motion and a second. Is there any additional discussion on the motion? Okay. Seeing none, I think we can do this on a voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. And I did just want to say nice job to staff and to Mr. Henry and SWCA, as well as the city manager and all who made comments tonight, I think, which we can confidently say it's been a very inclusive process up to this point, and I think we'll continue to do that. So let's take a 8-minute break. We'll be back at 8:30.
So I guess we should keep these portions of.
Yes.
We decided to turn these back in so we don't have to make more copies.
For 2012. Do any members of the council want to pull any item from consent?
Mm-mm.
Okay, and I don't have any requests from the public, so is someone prepared to make a motion on those items?
I will make a motion that we accept or approve the items as submitted.
I'll second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. If there's no addition, I think she's okay.
Oh, yeah, I'm okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what they say.
Yeah, we're good. So we have a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion, this is the voice. But all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. Okay, that concludes our consent agenda. Let's move on to our regular business item. This is item number 4, and this is the Grover Beach Lodge and Conference Center Public Improvements. City Manager.
Honorable Mayor and Councilmembers, before we move forward, just for the record, just as with the past item, the staff initially identified Councilmember Peterson as a person that could have a potential conflict. However, after reviewing the plans and measuring the distances, the project is outside of the 500-foot radius. So I just wanted to make sure for the record that that is clear.
Thank you.
We'll let you remain. We'll let you stay. No.
That's kind.
City Manager.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, this item, as has been noted, is regarding the Grover Beach Lodge and Conference Center public improvements. Obviously, in terms of the background, I don't need to review the history of the project. That was done in the previous item, and I think everyone is well aware of it. I do think the salient points are, however, that this project is really being brought forward as the result of a partnership. The partnership essentially or initially was formed with the approval of the JA back in 2006. And the purpose of the partnership was to bring about the conference and the hotel and the conference center project as has been envisioned since 1982. And essentially, the partners in the JA, the Joint Authority, consist of the state park representatives and the city representatives. And they have met periodically throughout the years in bringing this project forward. Sitting on the from the city side has been the mayor, and the mayor pro tem has served on that committee for quite some time. AUGMAP initially proposed was a 135 room hotel on a 7.5 acre site with a 4,000 square foot meeting facility, and all of that was contained in a single building on 7.5 acres. When the joint authority members reviewed that concept, they encouraged Pacifica to essentially go back to the drawing boards and develop a project that made a better use of the site, was actually better from a hotel perspective in that it added in the additional 150 rooms, take a look at a larger conference center, and the result of the of that effort is essentially the project that you've seen and have before you at the present time. And quite literally what has happened as a result of that is that the project really has been made more public, in that there are a lot more public areas that are now available in what is truly a master plan, and those include probably better than 5 acres of actual added park space. For instance, the West Plaza Park is a good example of that. And it was recognized by the, at least with the growth in the project, that from the at least the Joint Authority representatives, that essentially what we were looking at is public elements to this project that really went well beyond the benefit of just the operation of the hotel, and essentially were of a general benefit to the public as a whole. And again, as noted, it primarily, again, reemphasized what was truly intended originally in both the general plan of the city, the state's general plan, and the existing LCP that originally had this site, believe it or not, at somewhere near 22 acres, if I'm not mistaken. So this is in much more keeping with those concepts. And I wanted to relate to you in terms of the public benefit. What kinds of public benefit are the conference center itself? The West Grand, West Plaza Park improvements have already been alluded to. Essentially, what you're doing is creating a public park that will enhance what obviously is there now, and will better serve the general public than, in essence, it actually will the hotel guests, quite honestly. And the public parkways that walk up to the public park are the same way. The improvements on West Grand Avenue are similar, and those improvements probably would be required to come forward whether this project occurred or not. And they would serve not only the state park properties, but you're also looking at the vacant property at the corner of Grand and Highway 1. And those improvements essentially will provide access to the beach, improved access to the beach for not only hotel guests, but also the general public. Even the equestrian facility in its location will actually be an enticement for folks to use that facility, whether they're horsemen from within the area or without. I can tell you right now the added amenities will assist in bringing people again to the equestrian facility, to the park in general, and there will be general public benefits associated with it. Consequently, it is staff's perspective that the council should take up the discussion of recognizing the public's responsibility in terms of actually financing and ultimately owning these facilities as a part of that greater partnership. And, you know, obviously all of those benefits come about, but they come about with a cost, and the estimated cost at this particular time, as outlined in the report, is about $5.9 million. I should note that obviously these costs are subject to change as we go forward, and we'll know more about what those costs actually are as we get closer to Grand Avenue improvements and those at that West Grand Avenue intersection. Also, the undergrounding, we have a separate fund. The council's already identified this stretch of undergrounding as being a priority. We have approximately $185,000 in that fund that would be available for that project. Several of these projects, as I've noted, are already in the CIP. And then the looped water line is estimated at about $175,000. And again, this is a facility that will assist all of the properties in the area and improve fire protection capacity. So I'm thinking that such a financing plan should include obviously those funds, but in additionally, obviously that leaves at this point, given the current estimate, somewhere in the neighborhood of $4.7 million. And I think there are some alternatives of utilizing the projected project revenue to actually finance the remaining improvements. And that could be structured in a number of different ways. One alternative is the possibility of using a reimbursement agreement. The other is of approaching the financing with a community facilities district. These are things that we still need to take a look at and work out. The other is some discussion with our partner, which is, again, the state, which is already at least tentatively indicated a willingness to participate in some of these improvements. All of that needs to be ultimately put into a financing plan that we would then bring back for the council to review. I think in looking at this project as a whole, it is important, as I point out in the staff report, to remember that this is the primary project for our economic development strategy. It's probably the catalyst project. It is what the council has envisioned for a very long time, and there are benefits beyond just using, while you know, we would use project generated revenue to pay for this finance, in turn, again using conservative figures, will generate at a minimum a little over $6 million in local spending. And that local spending, it's obvious that you know, not all of that will remain in Grover Beach, but but a portion of it certainly will be because of our proximity. And it's hoped that that would also be inciting to bring other businesses here. Additionally, there's the payroll aspect that there are, you know, at least a minimum of 50 people that would be employed, and that annual payroll would be about $1.5 million. And there's also an estimated multiplier effect when you have a local payroll, because those people have to spend their money somewhere, and hopefully a large majority of them would be local folks that would be doing business here locally. So essentially, what I've covered with you tonight is the prospect of recognizing the city's responsibility, or taking on the responsibility for these public improvements, and direct staff to essentially outline and return with a financing plan that would be contingent upon the project completing the full entitlement period process, which would mean going all the way through the Coastal Commission. That doesn't mean in some of these aspects that we wouldn't take on some of these projects on our own anyway. For instance, West Grand Avenue probably will happen regardless of whether the hotel project continues or not, as is ultimately the undergrounding in the looped water line. But essentially, the majority of this would be contingent upon completing the entitlement phase, which is actually getting it through the Coastal Commission. That completes my remarks at this point. I'm available to answer any questions that you may have regarding this approach, and I'll conclude with that.
Okay, thank you, Bob. Let's see if there's any questions. Let me go to my right. Karen?
Well, I think I need some clarification. When we're talking about a public facility, and
what need to happen is essentially you would modify the concession agreement, that would most likely become a leasehold interest of the city for that same period of time, and then the city would make a decision as to how and whom is to operate that that convention center.
I see. I think that's really my only question at this point in time. So same thing with the putting green?
Well, ultimately, you know, that is a public benefit. That would ultimately belong to the golf course.
Okay.
And some of these things, yes, we would participate in the financing of in order to accomplish them, in part, hopefully in partnership with the state. But, for instance, the West Grand Avenue Plaza, that would ultimately be maintained from the very get-go by the state, as well as would the equestrian area.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Bill?
I have no questions.
Debbie?
I have questions.
Okay.
I'm wondering about the option of increasing TOT or perhaps creating a BID for the facilities which are for profit. So the conference center, Lesage, and the putting green, even possibly the equestrian staging, but I know there's no way, there are no fees, so we can't take money if there's no money taken. But I'm wondering if any consideration's been given to perhaps increasing our TOT from 10% to 11% or 12% to allow for a little additional income.
I haven't thought about it at this point. If that was something that the council wanted us to follow up on, obviously increasing the TOT, it's a general tax, and that would require going to the ballot on that particular measure. Relative to establishing some kind of a bid district, if you will, it's something to think about, but that would also take the agreement of the parks folks, since they have an individual concern.
Okay. And this is on a little bit different line, but basically, if we're talking about taking that roughly $400,000 to $500,000 a year that we we're expecting would be generated in TOT and sales tax. Is that right?
Well, sales tax, and there also is a little bit of property tax in there. Since the redevelopment agency goes away, whatever property tax would now flow to the city.
So we're thinking of using that. What's left over then? What do we have left over to fund our other really big economic development engine, which is the fiber optics?
Well, I don't think that they're entirely related. You know, you have to look at them at independent projects with independent funding sources. We're going to have to be, just since redevelopment has gone away, we're obviously going to have to be creative in a couple of different areas.
I guess my thought is that there's one pot. So if we're taking all the cream out of that pot for one project, then is it going to hamper our development of the other project?
You know, I hadn't thought that there was any direct relationship between the conference or the hotel and conference center project and the network itself. Mm-hmm. That's something that I really we haven't given much thought to.
Okay. And also, it looks to me like if we need about $5 million and we're getting about $500,000 a year in, it's about a 10-year project to fund it. Have you looked at putting a cap on the annual amount? And have you looked at putting a cap on the total amount?
All of that would obviously have to be detailed in the financing plan itself. One of the things that also to keep in mind is that these estimates are just based on what we know the initial revenues will be. There's no escalation in them. So obviously, if the project works as we hope it does, there would be growth in revenues that would, in fact, return to the city.
And that's my next question, and I can sit here and figure this out probably, but if we're looking at it generating conservatively another $6 million a year, thank you. That's all.
Phyllis?
I'm still a little confused about who's going to be owning these, the public facilities.
Ultimately, you know, we will participate in the financing, but at the end of it, it depends on the facility itself. The plaza facilities, whether we ultimately participated in the construction, the state did, or it was a combination of the two, ultimately, I think from the get-go, we would think that the plaza would be owned and maintained by the state. The benefit is that, yes, while they end up owning the plaza, the benefit is that obviously citizens from here as well as throughout the area will benefit from using that as an enhanced park facility. So the ownership in a few of these would ultimately be, from the get-go, would be the state, simply because they will achieve the maintenance responsibility from that point on.
So we are paying for the construction of these particular items, but we're not going to be owning it.
We may, that could be true. We may, again, need to work with the state ultimately in making that determination.
And let me just jump in here, because the state has expressed willingness to contribute for the, I guess you call it the West Park improvements.
Right, right.
So there has been that discussion. So it's not just the city per se. So the state has expressed an interest in helping fund those improvements.
Now, for instance, the West Grand Avenue. We'll own West Grand Avenue.
Well, yeah, we do anyway. But I'm just having a little bit of a hard time putting out money for something that we're not going to own.
Well,
I mean, I know there's brought forward the benefits in the future, possible sales tax, TOT, et cetera. But it just seems like an awful lot of money for us to put out for something that is going to be owned by the state.
Yet that benefit will be shared, and I guess that's the best answer I can provide.
So when there are fees for things such as the conference center, which I'm sure there will be, will we be sharing in those fees?
You know what? I don't have any questions. I do have comments, so I'm going to hold off on that. So this is a business item, and I'm going to open this up to the public and see if there's someone who would like to address this item before the council. Ms. Roth, would you like to? Absolutely.
Thank you, Mayor Scholes and council members. I really appreciate the city manager for bringing this up tonight. As you've heard, it was the desire of Pacifica as well that the financing plan and then the project come forward to you for action at the same time. So as you know, we're not taking action on the financing plan tonight, but I think it's an important conversation to have so that everyone is clear moving forward how this will work. And so just maybe this helps a little bit, but one of the possibilities is that Pacifica build everything and be reimbursed for building it. And that's something that we're willing to consider. It's almost $25 million project, and that's just the hard construction costs. And if you take out the public improvements, it's about an $18 million project, hard construction costs. When you include our development costs, our soft costs that go along with it, if you take out the public improvements, we're still putting in $26 million. So just a couple of comments on a couple of the things that were said tonight. We're looking forward to digging into the details and working out a financing plan with Bob over the next month, and we feel optimistic that we can do that. As you've heard, our project is going to generate revenues, and those revenues can be considered as possible sources for a reimbursement agreement or another aspect of this financing plan. One thing that we wouldn't be able to do is we wouldn't be able to, if we were to pay for all of the costs up front, we wouldn't be able to accept payment over a 10-year period, as you mentioned, Councilwoman Peterson. We wouldn't be able to get a bank to finance that, and we can't act as a bank and loan money out over a 10-year period. But those are all the kinds of details that we will work out over the next month so that when we come back to you, we have a financing plan that's supported by Pacifica and the city and state parks, and then hopefully we'll have answers to your more specific questions. I don't know if that helps, but I'm available if you have any questions or concerns. Thank you.
That does help. Thank you, Ms. Roth. Is there anyone else? Okay, let me close it. And for these public improvements, I think we were pretty clear about there had to be a nexus, that there had to be public benefit for at least for me to feel comfortable even entertaining the notion of using public funds. So I understand, Phyllis, what you're saying, but I think if we look at this in the sense of the public will actually own the facilities, so whether it is through the state or through the city, it will be taxpayers' monies that are being used to improve public improvements. And so that I think that's kind of a bigger picture way to look at it. And then certainly some public monies will be used to maintain the site, and I think Pacifica will also pick up some of that share as well, so that helps. But I just want to step back also to say that the original project was 7.5 acres, and it was on the dirt lot. It was a marginal project at best. And I can tell you, having been involved with this project since 2003, we originally had tried to talk to state representatives to do more of a master plan, and it took several years just to have that discussion. And I think it was from one of the state landscape architects and the state architect who said, hey, we have a tremendous opportunity here. And when I say we, it's not just the city, it's the state, to do some master planning to take a marginal plaza with a restroom in the most visible spot, and do something that's more pedestrian oriented with this sea of asphalt out there. And so jointly the JA and Pacifica worked through a solution to expand the site from 7.5 acres to 13.4 acres. And I think we all realized that that brought with it some potential additional cost to this project. And so in our discussions, recognizing that that was in fact the case, we understood that there would be some negotiation between the city, the state, and Pacifica. So I think Bob talked about what is the public getting for this? So the public amenities that we've talked about. I was just at the golf course on Sunday, and I saw a lot of folks looking for the trailhead and looking around the bathroom, the restroom, and it's not easy to find. The plaza improvements near Finn's, the connection to our existing boardwalk, and, you know, Bob accurately portrayed the West Grand Avenue enhancements, the frontage improvements, and we've talked about that here, is we really need to find a way to underground these utilities and create a more attractive. In, I want to say 2005 or 6, and unanimously said this is an appropriate use. So the master plan concept is a good one, and I think we need to find a way to identify what are the public improvements, as Bob has put in his staff report tonight, and figure out a way to recognize there is financing that comes with that, because we've talked about this being the economic catalyst project, and this is really to revitalize the Grand Avenue corridor. So tonight we're just being asked to give some direction for staff to put together a public financing plan. I would also say maybe we need to modify that to say that public work with the subcommittee and the state and then return with the financing plan. The other point I wanted to really make is I don't want anyone to mistake the public investment not only in the new park area Bob talked about, but the frontage improvements, because the private investment will in fact help with other potential public private investment in the area. We talked about the corner lot that's already approved with a smaller hotel. I know that the general plan envisions something greater than what's on the Lesage property now. We can talk about the underutilized property on the corner of 2nd and Grand, which is where I believe there's ATV rentals there. So there is public benefit beyond the scope of this project. So I'm hoping we keep that in contact as we go forward. And then this financing plan, I think Ms. Rolfe talked about, the developer is willing to put all the improvements in up front if there is a reimbursement agreement that can be reached. And then I think Bob talked about another potential way to do this is a community facilities district, and that would be taking a portion, I'm not saying all, but a portion of future revenues and forming a district. And I think having a little experience with CFDs, the fact that you have one property owner probably makes that a much easier option.
You think?
So I think right now just we're being asked to recognize the city's responsibility and then give direction for staff to work with the state and Pacifica and return to us with a financing plan for consideration. No one's approving anything tonight on April 16th. So those are my comments. Sorry for going on, but I wanted to try and add a little bit more to the discussion. Bill?
I would like to comment. I've been involved in this project now for, I guess, 3 or 4 years, 5 years, and I have talked to a lot and use them. So I think we're being asked to contribute to this, but I think it's well worthwhile. I think we will greatly improve the facility or what we have to offer the public, and I think it will help in keeping that convention facility full and operating, and it'll pay off in the long run. It's just so important that we expand this project as has been done, and we have to contribute to it, and I think it's a great idea, and I'm fully behind it.
Okay. Any other comments, Karen?
Well, sure, I'll chime in. First of all, I have to say that I am very impressed by the conceptual drawings that we're seeing here. The public access, the walkways, the trails, I think just adds to the value of this project to our community and surrounding communities as well. So I do believe that we do have a responsibility. We need to take responsibility for these improvements, some of them, many of them, particularly those that are going to be of great benefit to the people of our community, and then as well as reap the benefit later on when revenues are realized and so on. So I would be I'd be very interested to see what kind of a financing plan we can come up with. I see that there's been so much done already that is well beyond what the original concept was that, I mean, I think that we can really work together and I think make this work. So I'd be very interested to go forward.
Okay. Anything else, Debbie or Phyllis?
I concur with what my colleagues have said, and I do believe that this is big vision, and I'm thrilled that we have big vision, and I agree. One other thing that hasn't been mentioned is that West Grand right now doesn't really even have workable sidewalks on both sides. So I feel as a matter of public safety, it's something we need to consider, and that the equestrian staging facility on the other side of Grand is part of that. So I think we have a responsibility also to look after some of these things. My one concern is that historically, Grover Beach has always let somebody else come in and take the best corner and get all the money from it, and let somebody else take the part of town and annex it to theirs, and then we don't have it. And so I want to make sure that we're not selling our souls, that if half of that comes into Grover Beach and we get our sales tax on that, it's only $40,000 a year, and that's not huge. If we do a business improvement district and add 2% to the 10% that's already in there with TOT, it's $60,000 a year. So we're not talking about great big huge numbers coming back to the city, and so I think that we need to, we are talking about big numbers overall, but I think that we need to be cognizant of profit for the city, so that the city does actually benefit from it.
Very well said. I will have a very difficult time approving a financing plan that does not include money coming to the city. We have money going out for a putting green. Well, I hope we see some of that money coming to us. Why should the state get all that? The conference center. We need to get some kind of fees that come to us for this. We need something for our money other than a pipe dream, which I'm really sorry to say, involves hoping that we will get sales tax and hoping that we will get TOT. Sometimes those things don't occur. So we need to, in this financing plan, put something that says that the city of Grover Beach will be making some money. Thank you.
Okay. So okay, I'm compelled to ask this or to ask you to clarify, because I think you touched on this a little bit. There will be revenues coming to this city. The whole concept is to take a portion of those revenues and to invest it in public improvements. So just real quickly, and also depending on the length of the financing, we're talking about a hotel being here, let's say the initial take is 50 years, but it's going to be beyond. So there will be revenues generated. So, Bob, what are some of the areas that you had have been discussed that would generate revenues to this community?
In terms of the project specifically or beyond the project?
Projects. I'll give you 5 minutes. No, go ahead.
Project specifically. Well, obviously, as I said before, in doing at least the calculations for this report, and please remember that these were just initial calculations, I took very conservative estimates.
So I'm not looking for specific numbers. I'm just looking at
right. The other part of this is obviously in the future. It's a little bit more difficult to project, but obviously if you begin locating facility buildings and new businesses on Grand Avenue, those will be directly contributing to the city as well.
And then I think there was in the JA there's a discussion about rental fees too, because part of the
right.
negotiation with the state. So there are, so you're going to just spell all that out. I think that's information that we'll need when you come back on April 16th. So I think that would kind of help fill some of the mm-hmm. gaps in information that we've got tonight.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
So what's recommended tonight is staff had said for the city to recognize the, and I'm always when you say city, you know, we and the citizens constitute the city, but I understand. So recognize the city's responsibility to finance public improvements associated with the lodge and conference center and direct staff to return with a financing plan for council's consideration. But I would, I'm thinking that the if we're going to go down this road, it would be more prudent for staff to work with the subcommittee and Pacifica and the state, and then return with the financing plan for council's consideration on April 16th. I think that would be a more appropriate recommendation. But let's see where the council majority is on this.
I concur with that.
I support that.
So someone want to craft a motion to that effect?
I move that we direct the council, or we direct the city to move forward in conjunction with the state and Pacifica in bringing back to us a financing plan for the meeting on April 16th.
Including the subcommittee.
Including the subcommittee.
I'll second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. Is there any additional discussion on the motion?
In a moment.
Just that financing plan should include our portion of a percentage of revenue.
Very good. Everyone okay with that?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. And I think on the staff report it says roll call, so we'll do that. Roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. Okay. So that will be back on April 16th.
Listed here is the basic goals and work tasks that were generated at the onset of the two-year fiscal term that represented our FY11 and FY12 budget. And the purpose of this report is really to try and provide you with a status report as to what happened to those goals and tasks, work tasks, and what the actual completion was, and give you a little bit of information as to how we accomplished those things. In essence, there were, I believe, 9 major goal areas that were pointed out, and in addition to those goals were essentially supported with 41 work tasks. And I'm pleased to be able to report that the city has been able to complete or is nearing the completion of 28 of those original 41 items. And obviously there were some reasons why we didn't move forward on certain goals. Some of that had to do with timing. Some of it had to do with staff and resource limitations. But it's also important to note that some of those work tasks were actually accomplished ahead of schedule as well. It's also important to recall that during the 18 months covered by the status report, it was a challenging workload for the city. Essentially, during that same period, we put 244 reports before the council, and the range of topics included everything from legislative advocacy to state budget threats that we've had to deal with, to grand jury requests for additional information. That is just done to point out the variety of things that we've had to work with during the period. The point of this, of bringing the goals to your attention in the status report, is simply to use that as a backdrop for what is the next step, and the next step is actually the formulation of the goals for the upcoming budget session. And we're only going to take a year at a time this time, largely because as a whole.
So, Bob, why don't you just mention what the 9 goal areas are?
The goal areas.
And in order.
It included economic development, and that was the number one goal. And actually, sharing that position was the streets, was the actually 1B, if you will. Then that was followed in streets. The goal was to develop a continuous network of streets and sidewalks that provide for the safe and efficient movement of automobiles, pedestrians, and cyclists. There was also number two was utilities and infrastructure. Develop a modern utility and infrastructure system that anticipates future demand for water distribution, wastewater collection, stormwater collection, and drainage. Number three was public safety, and the goal was to maintain a safe community by providing well-trained and equipped public safety, emergency, and medical services and personnel. Number four was community development, and that goal was to develop plans consistent with the community's vision for the future of the city for balanced land use and for economic and community vitality. Number five was finance, increase the city's revenues to pay for current and future services. Number six was housing, provide for a variety of housing opportunities to meet the citizens' needs, including low and moderate income and senior housing units. Number seven was transportation, develop a multimodal transportation system with various modes of transportation and support facilities that facilitate the safe movement of goods and people to the community and the South County. And number eight, facilitate the implementation of the council's vision for the community through its effective and efficient use of resources. And number nine was parks, develop park facilities that will contribute to improving the quality of life for residents and visitors to Grover Beach.
So it was actually 10.
It actually is 10. There's 10. That's correct.
Okay. Any questions of staff? Let me start to my left. Willis, do you have any questions?
No.
Debbie?
No.
Bill?
Nope.
Karen?
I do have one.
Good. Okay.
And this is under Goal 2, Utilities and Infrastructure.
The water table. The ultimate goal of that, and we haven't been able to achieve it yet, is that within our partnership agreement with the other cities, we should be able to negotiate a credit for returning that water to the aquifer, if you will.
Right. So then there has been some work done.
There has been some work done.
Okay. So I'd be very interested for that to be included so we know that we are at least have made some headway. I think that was my only question. Thank you.
Actually, okay. I have one now.
Okay.
In that same section, complete the design of undergrounding of utilities on West Grand Avenue between Highway 1 and the Pacific Ocean. My concern is we've had several property owners who have done improvements, and we've not charged them undergrounding fees because of his exorbitant or whatever, and we had talked about coming up with a new system, and I'm wondering if that is in the works, because that would help to improve the fund for that.
We've talked about it, but there hasn't been any progress to date in the further revision of that ordinance. Certainly it is something we can continue to take a look at as the council identifies its priorities for the next year.
All right, thank you.
Okay, so Bob, I know you had talked about 244 staff reports, and I certainly want to acknowledge the work that staff has done and the range of projects that have been looked at. But I'm wondering if you could maybe just kind of clarify for us, because I'm looking at this and you're on page six, you say a complete installation of energy efficiency improvements using federal funds, and then there's a date of June 2011. Is that the date that it was completed? Is that the date that was targeted?
Actually, that is first the date that it was targeted.
Okay. So what would help me is we had goals, we had tasks, we had put dates behind them. You know, it's truly for us to truly know, were the tasks completed by the date, or did it come after the date? What are the circumstances around that? Because I kind of get the sense of six achievable tasks for 2012.
The other point I would like to make there is that it probably would be beneficial if we provided you with these periodic updates as to what the progress was, rather than just giving you a status report at the end of the term.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that could be done along with the quarterly budget reviews that we provide to the council on a regular basis.
Because I think the, you know, because the other part of this is, in obviously having been part of staffs in other jurisdictions, I think this would help you and help us understand the resources, because I understand responding to grand jury reports and looking at changing ordinances is something that may not have been in the goals, but it's a council directive, and so it kind of takes you off of those tasks, and right. So we just need to make sure we're cognizant of that as we move forward.
Right.
So then the last thing is, maybe you can just kind of spell out the process, because you're obviously bringing us a report on goals and work program, giving us a status report, but we're building toward a budget. So maybe
Yes. Just
touch on that a little bit.
The next position would be to come back to the council with some proposed goals, possibly, and then have the council review those, add, change, modify them. I had originally on the schedule identified that for March 19th. That may have to be just a bit later than that. If you remember, I provided you with a schedule probably back in early January, and we're trying to follow that as closely as possible.
Are we already behind schedule?
Yeah, a little bit. But we're, you know, actually... we're hitting some things very close to what I had projected back in January.
Great. Like I said, my comments are certainly in no way an indictment of staff, because I know that the staff works really hard with limited resources. So to the extent that you know, give us the information, and then we can give some better direction and maybe help focus the resources, I think would certainly help in the process.
Okay. And once we've done that, I would think that we would be able to complete the goal-setting process no later than early April. That would then in turn be used for the finalizing of the budget, draft budget. And then the budget, I'm anticipating we will do those.
The buttons, I think.
There you go. All right. We had no items pulled from consent tonight. Council committee reports. Does anyone have anything they want to report tonight? Okay, seeing no takers.
I do.
Okay.
On the sanitation district, I would like to report that we have worked out an agreement with the Central Coast Water Treatment Organization, and we have now accepted the brine that they want to get rid of. We dispose of it for them. That brings in about a little over $20,000 a year that the district will be receiving. Also, we had our mid-year budget review. There were several items on the budget that needed adjustment, which was done. Only two items required transfers from our fund balances. One was under our workers' compensation. The other was an adjustment to the waste discharge reporting and sewer management report, or sewer management plan. In addition, I would like to comment that under our public comment session, we had a gentleman by the name of John Carter, who is a resident of Oceano, who came forth, and he's one that suffers the flooding when they have such horrible rainstorms in the area. And he's been trying to work with the county and with the sanitation district, trying to eliminate that problem. He was invited to take a tour of the plant. And after the plant, he came back to another one of our meetings. He spoke very highly of the tour. He was very complimentary of our shift supervisor, Trini Rodriguez, who conducted the tour. And he commented that the plant is obviously kept very neat and clean, and he endorses the activities that the plant is undergoing. Very impressed with the operation. And lastly, we received an update on the county's permit application for the lagoon flooding management. We have directed staff to continue to cooperate with the county in an effort to get that lagoon squared away so that we don't
the residents of Oceano don't experience the flooding that they've had in the past. That's it.
So, Bill, as you know, Mr. Snook was here earlier. I'm not asking you to respond directly to his questions, but the fact that the surfriders are still looking for information and the public is probably looking for information, has there been a discussion with the board?
I bet they're talking about possibly on a monthly basis.
Okay. So I would just say, as our representative asked him, not only that, but maybe if there are some factoids or some sheets that, you know, maybe it's like 10 things you need to know about the South County Sanitation District that people maybe don't know, maybe an introduction. I think if you can ask the board to consider that, I think that would be a good service to the community so that they start getting more information on a frequent basis.
I had a question, too. Yeah. About the brine processing, that it's going to bring $20,000 in. Is that $20,000 profit after any additional costs, or is that twenty
profit.
Gross? That's profit. Okay.
And I had a question about that as well. What do we do with the brine?
It's washed out the line out to the ocean.
Okay. And so we take this from whom? Who do we take it from?
Company called Coast Water Treatment, Central Coast Water Treatment.
So it's treated and then it's released to the ocean?
Correct. It's tested prior to going out. It's tested prior to being brought to our plant. It's tested before we release it into the outflow, into the ocean.
Is it trucked to you?
Yes.
Oh, interesting. Huh.
Well, they have to dispose of it somehow. In the past, because we used to do this in the past, but with the underground wires we had, we didn't want trucks rolling over that area because the wires had been in the ground for so long, we were concerned about having shortages. So we cut off that process. We have now replaced all of the electrical wiring at the plant. All of that's been redone, and we also changed the route and the location where the brine trucks go to dump the brine into the pipe that takes it out to the outfall and out to the ocean.
Interesting. Very interesting. And then I have one more question. So if the public, like Surf Rider or anyone else, had a question about how much was the legal cost, and what was the Wallace Group paid to respond, how would they get those questions answered?
Contact John Wallace. Contact any of the board members. That information is public information. It's
okay.
Available.
Comes from Everbright. It's a Public Records Act request to the district.
Through the district, correct.
Of that information.
So they would just request that information through the Public Information Act or Public Records Act. Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, Bill.
Anyone else?
I do, actually.
Okay, Phyllis.
I went to two functions. One was the annual breakfast for the Housing Trust, and that was very interesting. Met some of the financial movers and shakers behind that. And the other, I was invited by the Sierra Club and the Surf Riders to attend the Monterey Sanctuary Alliance. There is an effort going underway to increase the boundary of the sanctuary all the way down into Santa Maria. And Congresswoman Carrie, and then, you know, you have kiosks and things, information panels available, and any more information that comes to me, I will let you know.
Great. Thank you. Okay. No, we don't have any city council member items, any council communications. I think Phyllis just gave us something. That was really good communication. Anything, anyone else? Okay. City manager.
Yes, just as a follow-up, the council had discussed scheduling a joint meeting with the commissions in a workshop setting, and to have that done in March. Staff has surveyed both the Planning Commission and the Parks and Rec Commission, and it appears at least at this point that the Parks and Rec Commission would have four members that could attend or are interested in, are available to attend a workshop on Thursday, March 22nd, and then you have three members that were interested in attending on Saturday, March 24th. Planning Commission, right. But we did not get much of a response from the Parks and Rec Commission. They preferred to meet on the 15th, which is their normal meeting date.
Okay, so here's my comment. The whole idea of doing this was for their benefit. However, if this is becoming too problematic and we can't get it coordinated, then I'm okay if they're okay if they don't feel the need for a joint meeting. I can't make the 24th, and I don't know how my colleagues feel about the 22nd. So.
Is that a Saturday? No.
That's a Thursday.
Thursday.
What time is that?
Would be in the evening.
So if at this point, you know, I think it would have been a benefit, but clearly it's not anything that's mandatory.
Right.
So
and we've got enough going on. If they're not you know, really anxious to be part of it, then I'm saying okay. I'm good.
And this workshop was for what?
It's really was a calibration for the council. So I guess you got kind of a response, city manager.
Yes.
Very good. City attorney, you have any reports or comments?
Thank you, Mayor. No.
Looks like we don't have any closed session. So with that, we are adjourned at 9:43.
Good job.
And then, you know,